I don't think it's an accident that Nika exists for mountain biking and it doesn't exist for any other discipline of cycling. Because mountain biking is the most fun discipline.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast powered by Ignition Coach Co. I'm your host, Adam Sabin, and this week, Drew, Dylan, and I cover a few listener questions on cross training and how to best track your progress across multiple modalities, how effective multi-sport training is for building base fitness, and we offer some input on how we approach inspiring younger athletes to get into sports and stay hooked on athletics. Today's show is also brought to you by Flow Formulas. Everyone here at Ignition heavily relies on Flow Formulas for everyday training, and if you too want to give it a try, or if you already subscribe to their products and need to re-up your inventory, head over to flowformulas.com today and use the discount code IGNITIONPODCAST10 for 10% off your order. As always, if you like what you hear, please share this with your friends and leave us a 5-star review, and if you have any questions for the show, drop us an email at matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast, or head over to Ignition Coach Co. and fill out the Matchbox Podcast listener question form. All right, let's get into it. All right, so first question this week, this one comes from Graham. Graham wants to know, should I look at volume or TSS when quantifying how hard a training week or block was? For context, I use heart rate for most activities except for road cycling, but the winter months has restricted outdoor riding, so most of the time is running, cross-country skiing, indoor spinning without power. I say this because I know that TSS is calculated differently depending on which method is used. Thanks, Graham. Mm-hmm.
I would look at a combination of a bunch of different things, and I would go beyond just looking at, duration or volume and TSS. Here's an example. So when you do block periodization and you do a block week, usually if you're doing an intense block week, the volume will be lower and the TSS won't be crazy. The TSS will probably be high for the given volume that you did, but it's not going to be some insane TSS number, even though that week is extremely stressful for your body and you need some serious recovery afterwards.
How is that right? Why wouldn't your TSS be? Wouldn't your TSS be big on a block week?
Well, it is big relative to the amount of volume you did, but the amount of volume you did wasn't that high. So, if that makes sense. So, if you were looking at TSS per hours per week, if that was the metric, which maybe Training Peaks should make a metric like TSS per hours. Per week or something, or TSS per minute, like your average TSS per minute for the week, that might be a cool metric for Training Peaks to start using. So your TSS per minute would be high, but your overall TSS for the week wouldn't be insane.
Got it. Okay. I see what you mean, because you're going to be doing harder, like higher intensity workouts. And you're not going to be doing all these long endurance rides. Like you're going to be replacing a 4-hour endurance ride with a 2-hour high intensity ride. So the TSS for those two rides might actually end up being almost the same, but 2 hours shorter. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Sure. Yeah. Right. So I guess that's what I'm getting at is that you kind of want to look.
But nobody does block weeks. Like,
okay. Well, that was
weeks
just...
are for block weeks are for the desperate.
That was just an example of how you should take into account multiple factors when determining how stressful a week was. You shouldn't,
Graham, I wouldn't, don't do block weeks. Just don't even do that. Just throw those out the door.
I wouldn't just look at one number is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. Sure. I think both. TSS is like duration is included in TSS because TSS is just a combination of your volume and your intensity. Your TSS is your load. So like, I think on paper, it would be better to go off of TSS, but in the real life, I look at both because I do want my volume to be increasing, like throughout a block and throughout the base season. I want both volume and TSS to be slowly increasing. Cause that's kind of the idea of progressive overload. And we all probably have like a good idea of like where we want our ideal or, like on big volume weeks, we kind of have a picture of what we want those to look like. And It's a lot easier to quantify 20 hours than it is like 800 TSS, because it's like you'd have to, it's just like easier to wrap your head around volume than it is TSS. So, but I look at both.
I mean, some people are so tuned into their TSS that they can visualize 800 TSS very easily, and they know exactly what they need to do to get 800 TSS.
Yeah, you're probably right.
But that's probably not most people.
I wouldn't like what you were saying, like TSS per minute. I wonder if there's a way to see the intensity factor for the entire week. Because I know that you can do intensity factor per ride. And that's basically what you're.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what it is, right? You're trying to judge how intense the entire week was, not just a ride, which, you know, is an interesting metric, I guess. I would argue that if you're so the other thing that I wanted this the other thing that I wanted to mention was that if you're chasing TSS, that can lead to bad training. Right. Because probably the quickest way to get a lot of TSS is to ride at tempo for as long as you can every single day, which is probably the worst training that I can think of.
Well, and, better than no training at all. Right.
Well, yeah, sure. But that's not, you know, that's not training. That's just sitting on the couch. So I think that, you know, if you're. I want to preface this whole conversation with, if you're following the correct training principles in the first place, you know, then look at these metrics to determine if you're training correctly, and don't fall into this trap where you're chasing, you know, you have limited time. The worst is, okay, you have limited time per week, but you're trying to increase your TSS. So ultimately that leads to the conclusion that I just need to ride at tempo for every single ride.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And I think too, you know, in this case here, so, you know, Graham mentions in the winter time, and this is particularly what he's, you know, struggling with, he's doing a multitude of, different modalities. So he's got some indoor training, which he doesn't have power. So he's just using heart rate. Then he's doing some cross country skiing, again, using heart rate, and then doing some running using heart rate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in this case here, if you're just looking at duration, and let's say your cumulative week hours of, you know, last week was 10 hours, but you only did two runs. And then this week, for whatever reason, you swap in and do four runs. You're probably not going to exceed those 10 hours because your runs are likely going to be shorter than the other two activities. Just, I mean, in general, you know, a hard running workout would be like an hour, whereas like a hard cross-country skiing or, you know, and I say hard, meaning like longer endurance ride or run or cross country ski, you know, are probably going to be double or even triple that. So it's hard to really use just volume in that case, because you don't really know, like if you swap it out, but the workout's shorter, but it still might be relatively the same difficulty or even harder. If you're just looking at volume, it's going to look like you kind of, you know, truncated your week, but you might not have actually relative to like exertion. I just went into Training Peaks just because out of curiosity, and I put in an hour using heart rate. I put in an hour of riding, running, and cross country skiing at 75% of max heart rate, which would kind of put you towards the kind of upper end of endurance, which I think would be pretty common for a running workout. Like you're probably going to see your heart rate a little bit higher than you would for a relative effort on the bike. And at 75% of max heart rate across all three disciplines, it's the exact same TSS, which I actually wasn't sure of because I hadn't really ever done that comparison before. But if you're just using heart rate, basically what Training Peaks, you know, the algorithm that they use is that heart rate is heart rate, whether you're doing it on the bike, on the run, cross-country ski. So you have to do an hour run to equal the same amount of TSS as you would for an hour bike. And that's pretty hard to do, honestly. Like, an hour run is not equal to an hour bike, in my opinion. I think an hour run is going to be way harder, or, you know, measurably harder for sure. So that's just an example here. If you're just looking at TSS too, then like Dylan was saying, then you're kind of chasing it, and now you're like pushing yourself maybe too hard on your runs because you're trying to keep up with whatever you were doing on the bike.
Yeah.
Anything else to add here?
No, I think that was good.
Cool. I will add, Graham, I like your style. I think mixing up your modalities in the wintertime, especially if you have access to some cross-country skiing, I think that's awesome. So it's good to see that. Okay, next question here. It's a little bit longer of a question, so let me get through it, and then we'll get back to the answering the question here. But this one comes from Adam. Hey, everyone. Thanks for all the information you have dumped out into the podcast. I've been an unstructured athlete for my entire life. Running, cycling, surf skiing, rowing, traditional skiing, and it has been an amazing resource for me to begin structuring my training and seeing results. My goals for next year are to drastically improve my running time. Adam wants to run a 10K in under 40 minutes. Currently, PR is set at 47 minutes. And I want to get on the podium at two different off-road multi-sport events, so kayaking, mountain biking, and trail running, typically finishing around 2 hours. Sounds kind of cool. My question is a couple questions here. So question number one, specifically for zone two training, how effective do you think cross training is in any discipline compared to specifically targeting one discipline? For example, I like to mix up my zone two training and do 60 minutes of rowing, 60 minutes of running, and 60 minutes of cycling in the gym every single week. How effective would that be compared to doing three 60-minute cycling sessions for building my cycling base? How much overlap do you think there is between having a running base and a cycling base? I like to think that it is more about getting my heart rate into zone two than the actual muscle groups I'm using. Actually, let's camp there for a second. We'll answer that one because the next question kind of is a little bit of a tangent. So
okay.
let's answer that first.
When I'm thinking of his question and cross training, I think of it as like tiers. And so, like tier one is going to be whatever modality your goals are in, that's what tier one is. So like if your goals are cycling oriented, tier one is going to be cycling. Cause like what's more effective if you're training for a bike race, what's more effective than riding your bike? That's going to be the number one effective. And then, you know, you kind of, you know, stair step down these tiers, and I would put like running in tier two, like running and skiing in tier two, cause that's going to be similar to cycling. It's mostly aerobic, mostly leg focused, you know, and you can use some common sense in that, like what goes there. And then the further you get away from cycling would be like tier three. So like rowing is like a full body workout. It's kind of like between tier two and three, but it is aerobic. And then like strength training would be like tier three. Maybe that's not even like cross training because that's something totally different. But like other modalities, like swimming's aerobic. But like it's the whole opposite side of your body. So that would be like further away from cycling. But I say all of this, like tier one, tier two, tier three. So like, first of all, cycling is going to be the most effective. So if he says what would be more effective, doing one of each, a 1 hour run, bike, and row versus 3 1-hour bikes. The 3 1-hour bikes are probably going to be more effective. But there's also like a give and take of like you have to think about why you're doing cross training right now. And it's probably so that you can maintain a prolonged motivation throughout the season. So like right now it's cold outside in most places in the US. And so riding outdoors is less enjoyable. And so a huge reason that people do cross training right now is though that they don't have to like drag themselves out into the cold weather to ride their bike. They can do a 1 hour run or 1 hour row. And so I think that sometimes that like give off or that what's that that's not the right word that trade-off that trade-off is good because you're stretching out your motivation so that when it does get warm outside you'll be even more motivated to ride your bike then. So if it doesn't always just come down to what's most effective, there's some other things at play when you're talking about cross training, I think.
Well, also this guy is different than our typical listener. He actually is training for a multi-sport event. So
that's true.
Right. So if we go back to Adam's goals, one of them is to run a sub 40 minute 10K. And the other one is to podium at a multi-sport event, at two off-road multi-sport events, which includes kayaking, mountain biking, and trail running.
Good point. So, I forgot about all that.
Yeah. So basically everything you said was useless.
Well, it was useful for all the people who listen who
applicable to the general listener. Yeah.
But I mean, so for this guy's case, he does need to be doing all those sports just like a triathlete would.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and I think we've talked about this before, but Like one thing, Adam, you know, he's talking specifically for zone two training here. Mm-hmm. So it kind of goes back to our last question. You know, I would kind of agree here that if you're getting your heart rate into the right zone, especially since you're doing three different modalities that are all very relevant to the activities that you have goals in, then yeah, I'd say you're probably getting pretty close to equal trade-offs there as far as like aerobic adaptations. Especially since, I mean, not to say you're not doing enough, but to only be doing 3 hours of base training a week, you know, like anything's going to be, anything that's contributing towards your aerobic base is going to be valuable here. You know, so I think that's fine. What I will say though, is once you get past your zone two training and you get into some more higher intensity training, we've kind of talked about how the approaches that I've seen that have worked the best are when you're focusing on a modality for a given block. So like you're doing all of your intensity rowing, and then the next block you're doing all of your intensity on the bike, and then the next block you're doing all of your intensity running. Instead of just like throwing a bunch of different stuff at it and your body's not really sure how it wants to make those adaptations, like trying to get pretty specific with making those adaptations in one of those modalities at a time is generally what we've seen as being the most effective. You know, so that's just something to keep in mind once you get past this zone two training. But Dylan, so I had a question for you because you've done some research on this specifically as it relates to which cross training modality has the most overlap or crossover fitness with cycling. And you've always mm-hmm. come back to cross country skiing is what the studies show, is that cross country skiing is the most effective cross training modality. But I'm curious, have you seen studies where they relate cross training with cross country skiing, let's say, versus not cross training and just doing all of your aerobic base with cycling? So kind of going back to what Drew was saying, where you have that tier one, okay, if you're a cyclist, you're doing all of your base training with on the bike. Have they compared that to if you're doing some or all of your base training cross country skiing, which is the most effective cross training modality? And then compared those two?
You know, I would have to go back and look at those studies because it's been a while since I made that video about cross training. And you're right, cross country skiing okay. did have the most crossover with cycling. I think running was next. If I had to guess whether a full cycling training plan versus a training plan that mixed cycling and cross country skiing, which would lead to better cycling results, I don't think this is a hard question. I think you can probably safely guess that the cycling only training plan would lead to better results. But just like Drew was saying, I don't think that means that you have to only be on your bike all year. And if there's one time of the year where you should probably be mixing things up, it's off season, early base season.
Yeah. I feel like right. a part of what you're saying, Adam, is the, what do they call it? Economy. So like the more that you ride your bike, the more economic you get at riding your bike. So like, mm-hmm. even though you might end up more physically fit from cross training, cross country skiing, like all winter, you're missing out on that economy part of like just being more efficient on the bike. If that makes, I don't know if sure. that's, if I'm thinking right, but that's where I'm thinking.
Yeah. I mean, I was just generally curious if that was something that they had looked at in the study. For example, so a guy raced with this summer at Migration Stage Race, Tanner Visnick, he's from Utah. He said that last winter, for the first time ever, he comes from a skiing background, but for the first winter in a long time, he only cross-country skied. He didn't ride his bike like at all. And he said when the spring came around and he got on his bike, he felt super fit, but he didn't have a ton of depth like he normally would from base training with on the bike. Mm-hmm. And he kind of speculated part of that is just because you're not going to go out and ski for 5 hours, whereas you can go out and do a 5 hour,
sure.
you know, endurance ride pretty easily on the bike, you know? So he found like the first, you know, half of his fitness was there, but then that second half, you know, later in the race, he didn't have as much fitness depth. And it took a while, he said, for him to kind of build that depth back into his fitness.
Sure.
So I was just curious if they had done any studies to kind of compare that.
Yeah, I would have to go back and look at the research, but I think that you can pretty safely estimate that a cycling only training plan is going to be superior to a cycling plus cross country skiing training plan if you're training for cycling.
What about that homie that's been on the podium the last 2 years at Leadville? Doesn't he like do mostly?
Dude, I mean,
is he like an anomaly?
Yeah, John Gaston.
Yeah, I mean, I would say he is an anomaly. I mean, if we want to keep throwing out anecdotes, you know, I don't know if Keegan Swenson has ever cross country skied in his life. So,
fair enough.
You know,
that's true. Okay, so we'll move on to the second part of Adam's question here. So Adam wants to know, do any of you have any kids or young people in your life that you want to inspire to get into cycling or athletics? As a father of two young children, 2 and 4 years old, I would love to see them get into sports as I believe it's really rewarding physically and mentally and could potentially keep them out of trouble. What would you say to a young person, say 10, 15 years old, who you wanted to have a positive influence on or who looked to you for advice? Then he goes on, it's a little painful to know how much time I have spent trying hard and never really seeing consistent results, but it's also exciting to know that at 38 years old, my fastest days could still be ahead of me. Thanks, Adam. Now I would say, yeah, if you haven't structured your training up to this point, then yeah, at 38 for sure, your fastest days are ahead of you if you start doing that. And if you hire a coach.
Sounds like a question for the dads.
Yes, I know.
Yeah, Drew, I don't know. I mean,
went the other direction on his second question there.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, so I think it's a good one. So
yeah, it's probably, Drew, this might be like,
when you're thinking about trying to...
this might be like my favorite listener question. I love this.
All right, let's get into it. What do you think about, like, what are some things that you do to try and help inspire the next generation of athletes?
Yeah, a lot of things are like popping into my head when you were reading that question. Obviously, I'm thinking about my own daughter and how we want to like introduce her to sports and all of that. I think the first thing that I'll say, and I was taught this a long time ago, is your kids are going to probably like what you like because you like it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like, there's probably not a lot of, like if I really love bike racing and my wife really loves bike racing and we go to bike races and we ride bikes all the time, odds are Andy's probably going to like riding bikes because she looks up to us and we're going to do it together as a family.
Or they're going to rebel against you.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that, but, like most of the time, like you end up liking sports teams because your dad likes that sports team. Like, I could care less about basketball, but for some reason I'm a Kentucky Wildcats fan because that's what my dad likes, you know? So it's like, I think naturally they're going to go that way, but I would also, you know, caution that as well. Like, I want to introduce Andy to other sports. Like, I really want her to play soccer because I really enjoy soccer too. Just things that I think that, like, we can enjoy doing together. I think that's a big thing. So like soccer and cycling, we can do that together and have fun. Yeah, I think the main thing when they're young, and we say this to like people who want to like come to us for coaching at a young age. If kids are really young, like I would say less than 15, we usually turn them away from coaching. Like if a 13-year-old came up to me, and I've had this happen, like a 12 or 13 year old comes up to me and the parent says, oh, she really wants to start training and she's ready. And I would give some pushback and say, I think you guys should just be having fun right now. If you're looking for structured training, she should talk with like a local junior team and get involved there. Yeah. And I think that's probably the maximum amount of structure that a young athlete should have. At least with cycling, I think, because I don't want to be in the business of like burning out kids too early. So I personally think that like a structured training plan, the way that I would do it as a coach is better to wait off until they're like 15 or 16.
This is what I'll say, not from a dad perspective, because I'm not a dad yet, but from a perspective of somebody who grew up racing from the age I did my first race when I was 14. So I came up through the junior ranks and I've seen, I would say half, if not more, of the juniors that I was racing when I was 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, don't race anymore. And we're talking about, you know, riders that were really fast that could probably be pros right now if they set their minds to that, but they got burnt out. And I think the pattern that I saw is that it's usually the kids whose parents were pushing them to race that got burnt out. And kids like me, like my parents did not push me to race. If anything, they thought I was training too much and they thought that I was too obsessed with cycling. And training and racing was all my own decision. And here I am. I still love cycling. So I think that you can do more harm than good if harm is, you know, is meaning them not becoming a cyclist, if that's something you want for them, by pushing them too young to do something that they don't want to do. I would really let them lead you to what they want to do and not the other way around, because I've seen it happen so many times where the kid gets burnt out and then they're not even a cyclist as an adult.
Yeah, another thing.
Yeah, totally.
Go ahead, Adam.
Well, I think that's why it's important. Like, Drew, I like what you brought up there with, if you want them to get, you know, structure, have some kind of organization around the sport instead of just like going out with dad and riding in the woods, you know, or mom or whoever they're going out with, you know, their aunt or whatever. Try to find a local Devo team, you know, a team where they can be around other kids, because that's really what, like, that's why kids love team sports so much. They just get to be with their friends doing an activity that's fun. They don't have their parent like overshadowing the whole time, unless they're like, you know, that crazy coach or something like that. But, you know, like, it's a chance for them to just express themselves and be kids around other kids. And I think that's what's really important at that younger age. And I totally agree with that, you know, and that's, you know, that's going to be more effective for them in their development, to like be around others, see others, learn from each other, push each other, than just like putting them on a one-on-one training program, sending them out on their own. You know, like, that's just not fun. I mean, even as adults, like, we all get burnt out on riding by ourselves and just training, you know, solo sometimes, right? I mean, that's part of why we love racing so much. You know, if all of racing was just time trials, there probably wouldn't be nearly as many people in the sport. You know, we love that camaraderie. We love being around other people, pushing each other. And like Dylan's saying, like, I think that's super important to remember, is if your kid just doesn't have a liking to it, like, you know, 5 years from now, Dizzle, if Andy's like just not into it, and like you're really having to push her hard to ride her bike, to get out there, to come to the races, like, you're probably just gonna be like, that's okay. Like, this just isn't your thing. That's fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you have to stop doing it. Like, you can keep doing it and, you know, inspire her to do things that makes her happy, do things that she enjoys. And I think that's like, that's really important as kind of that father figure or mentor, you know, mother figure. If you're trying to like inspire your kids or some kids around you to get into a sport or just do sports in general, or any activity for them, or like, you have to exemplify like that it's fun. If you just like, if your kid just sees you all the time, like, oh, this workout sucked, like, this workout was so hard, I had such a bad race. Like, if it never looks fun to them, like, they're not going to want to do that. That, like, who wants to do something that doesn't look fun? You know, so the more fun you can have, the more you can express that this is something you enjoy, and the more you can just include them into that activity and like do have fun together. You know, don't take them out for your 3x20 threshold mm-hmm. workout. Like, take them out for the ride where you get to go hit some jumps and like do some fun stuff.
Mm-hmm. Are you suggesting hitting jumps with your kid on your bike?
You know what,
so at your own discretion.
You know what I will say about that? I don't think it's an accident that Nika exists for mountain biking and it doesn't exist for any other discipline of cycling, because mountain biking is the most fun discipline, and it's because mountain biking doesn't just involve pedaling as hard as you can. It also involves some technical skill and some jumps and, you know, riding downhill, and kids are into, you know, that's, I would say that skill sports like that, or maybe extreme sports, for example, you know, skateboarding, BMX, surfing, these are all sports that are much more popular amongst people, you know, in their 20s and lower, probably teenagers. It's probably the most popular demographic for those sports. And I would say mountain biking kind of combines both of those. So I don't think I don't think it's an accident that Nika is focusing on mountain biking.
Yeah, completely agree.
I think the biggest caution I would give to parents and maybe even coaches is being careful with the language you use around achievement and success. So I would say that you should really try to create and develop an environment of growth rather than like success. So when kids are younger, that's like really when they're shaping their identity and who they are. And if all you ever say to them, or even just like, I mean, not, yeah, just say, but like just the type of environment that you're in, like if all they're ever living is in this state of like, oh, you're so smart. Oh, you're so fast. Oh, you won that race. Like, try not to be so focused on results. Because as soon as that athlete or young person doesn't win the race, they're immediately going to start thinking, oh, I'm a failure. And so the better approach to that would be to try to create like basically a growth mindset. So this all kind of goes back to Carol Dweck. She's a I guess she's like a psychologist or a, I don't know, scientist. I don't know. She wrote a book called Mindset, and it's all about the growth mindset. And so, but this is even more important for young people because of what I said about like, this is going to be their identity that they carry with them for a lot of their life. So just trying to create an environment that says, instead of saying like, wow, you're so fast because you won that race, which is all results oriented and it's like fail or succeed, you should try to create this environment of like, wow, I liked how hard you worked. And oh, I liked that you didn't give up. And even if they lose, you can even still create this of like, yeah, you lost, but you know, how can we get better for next time? The growth mindset is all about like future growth and not current success. And so I think if you if you just hammer that into kids when they're young, like success, it's going to be, it's kind of like you're on a dangerous line of, unhealthy mental struggle if they aren't always successful, you know? So I'd be careful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, part of that too, is if you're encouraging growth or you're encouraging hard work, you're encouraging passion.
Yeah.
That translates over into all aspects of life.
Oh yeah.
You know, someday when they're a parent, you know, they're, if you're encouraging and they embrace the growth mindset, the passion, the love for something, they're going to apply that to being a parent someday, mm-hmm. you know, which is like kind of the ultimate, like, you know, you want your kids to grow up to be great parents someday and be better parents than you were. But it translates to so many other things, you know, school, work, relationships, and that's really important. Whereas like, if they're so focused on results and successes, when you transfer over to, you know, doing something different, you don't really know how to even achieve that success, and you don't know what it takes to try and get there, because you haven't embraced the whole process of what it looks like to work towards something. Whereas if you're process, you know, oriented, that can translate over anything. You see that all the time. Athletes become successful entrepreneurs. You know, business people become successful athletes, and in all these different, you know, different avenues that people take, and it's because they embrace that process, and you can apply that process to so many different things. It doesn't have to be, you know, oriented into just that one sport or activity or you know, industry or whatever it is. You know, you can, that translates outward.
Something that stuck with me for a long time that my pastor, I think, taught to me years ago was like one of the best things that you can tell your kids after a basketball game or after a soccer game or after a bike race is just letting them know how much you enjoy watching them play that sport. Like, Andy, I love watching you ride your bike. And I think that goes a long way. You know, like I don't know what that means, but that's always stuck with me. Like, I want to be the kind of dad that says that to my kid, like, man, I just love watching you ride your bike, or I love watching you play soccer. Just to let them know, like, we support them in whatever they do.
And it just lets them know, like, you're actually paying attention. You're watching, because that's what they want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You see it now with Andy. Like, she does something exciting, the first thing she wants is to show, you know, you and mom, hey, look what I just did. Come look at me. Like, my kid says it all the time. He says, like, did you see that? Did you see that?
Yeah.
Look at me. Did you see that? Oh, you know, it's because they crave to know that you're watching them, that you care what they're doing. You know, so doing that, like saying that instead of saying like, oh, I'm so proud of you. Oh, you won the game. Congrats. Like, just knowing that, hey, you're there watching intently, like that's super meaningful.
Yeah. Yeah, I before I got into cycling, I played like little league basketball, like, you know, every other kid probably. And I think one of the only,
is it called Little, I think Little League is baseball.
Yeah, whatever. What do you call it? What do you call it? Little League, what do you call Little League basketball then? Mighty, I don't know. That's football. Mighty Might basketball. Yeah, whatever. I played basketball for little kids, junior basketball, yeah. But I don't remember much of it. And I didn't really like it that much. But the one memory that I have is of me just totally stuffing my best friend who was on the opposing team. His name was Jordan Satterly. Probably haven't even talked to him since that game. I remember stuffing him when he went up for a shot, totally blocked him. And but my dad, I remember my dad was sitting right there in the stands too. So not only did I just like totally reject my best friend, but I also like my dad was right there in the background. And that was like the highlight of my junior Little League basketball career. But like the fact that my dad saw it was like one of the, like, you know, I don't know, was one of the motivating factors at play.
You know, the fact that that's the highlight of your basketball career really says a lot about your personality yeah. right now. The fact that dominating exactly. your friend was the highlight. I mean, it's you haven't changed even, that much. You
I didn't even think that of much. That. Yeah, you're right. I haven't, have I?
Dizzle's still just waiting for his moment.
Yeah.
He's going to shove it in your face.
I didn't even care about like if we won or lost. As long as I get to like block Dylan, that's like just reject him.
When yeah. you're
just,
when you're like
just wants to
when,
dunk on his
when you're 70 years old and your grandchildren are asking you about your cycling career, you're going to say the highlight was when you beat Dylan Johnson in a collegiate race.
Not a collegiate race, every collegiate race, because you sucked in college. No, that was a good question. Now he's got like yeah. now he's got all my like, and now I'm all like amped up to go be a dad for the rest of my life.
Well, we're at 36 minutes, so I think it's a good time to shut it down. Thanks, Adam. That was a good question. I did have one other question I was going to queue up, but we'll save it for next week.
Sweet.
It's not a listener question. It's a continuation from our conversation last week, but we'll skip it for now and we'll get to it next week.
Nice.
All right. See you guys.
See ya.
All right, folks, thanks for tuning in for the latest episode of the Matchbox Podcast. Like I said at the beginning, you can send any questions or topic suggestions to matchboxpod@gmail.com with email titled The Matchbox Podcast. Links to each of our social media pages can be found in the show notes. Tune in next week for another endurance training-related discussion and learn more about how you can find that extra match for your next big event. Catch y'all soon. Let's go!
Ready to start working with a coach that'll make you faster? It's easy. Just go to the Ignition Coach Co. website and fill out our athlete form, and we'll connect you to the best suited coach for the job. You'll jump on a free consultation, determine if it's a good fit, and determine a start date. If you don't feel the vibes with that coach, well, then no sweat. We'll connect you to another coach that might be better. And then it's off to the races, or at least off to the training for the races. Don't wait any longer. Sign up today.